Welcome to Family Talk. I'm Dr. Meg Meeker, and our host today is Dr. James Dobson. Dr. Dobson, we're going to jump right in because we have a very distinguished guest with us here today.
We do, Dr. Meeker, and I am so delighted to have him back with us. We've worked together before. I think this is the fourth time we've done radio together, and I've appreciated so much what you've had to say. I would like our listeners to know that we've been friends for 23 years, I think.
That's about right.
I first came to Colorado and came to see you because I'd had a heart attack about a year before. And I'll never forget that visit because it was very clear early on to me that you're a deeply committed Christian and a wonderful husband and father. I've learned that through the years. In fact, your wife, Margaret, is here with us today at the table. I haven't been able to convince her to talk, but she's here. So, and again, I've learned a lot about my own condition. I told you this the last time we had lunch together, that I have been evaluated every year for my heart after having had a totally blocked LAD, the most important of the arteries, and they tell me that my heart is beating like that of a younger man who hasn't had a heart attack. Then I give you a lot of credit for that, because I remember what you said to me that day. I walked in and told you that I was really trying to be good, and I was eating 8 grams of fat per day. And I don't know if you would subscribe to this today. Maybe you would, because your area is lipids. But you said, well, I'm going to put 80 grams of fat back into your diet, which was very good news. Not bad cholesterol, but good cholesterol. You remember that conversation?
I do. Yes, I do.
You've had many patients since then.
Right. And it's not the total fat. It's the kind of fat you eat that's important for heart disease. Yes.
Yeah. Well, I want to take a minute to spell out your credentials, because frankly, I want our listeners to take very seriously what you have to say today, and I'll explain why in a minute. Dr. Robert Eckel is a professor of medicine with appointments in the Division of Endocrinology, Metabolism, and Diabetes, and the Division of Cardiology, and he's a professor of physiology and biophysics at the University of Colorado School of Medicine. He is chairman of the Nutrition Committee and the American Heart Association, and has been, in fact, the past president of the American Heart Association. He's held appointments in the Department of Biochemistry, Physiology, Genetics, Biophysics, and the Department of Food Science and Human Nutrition. He's held adjunct appointments in the Department of Clinical Pharmacy and the Department of Integrative Physiology at the University of Colorado. He has published many books, 80 research papers and counting, and LDL cholesterol as a predictor of mortality and beyond, which is something I have reason to care about, that is one of his publications. In addition to that, he's been listed in Who's Who in Medicine and Healthcare, and one of America's top doctors in 2002, 2008, 2010, and 2014. I don't know what happened to the other years, but you have been a busy man to be involved in all those things. And I don't want to embarrass you, but you're one of the brightest people I know. So thank you for taking the time to come and be with us today. And Meg, you met him just a few minutes ago.
I met him just a few minutes ago, and as I was reading through his resume and everything, I too was so excited to talk with him, because your wealth of knowledge is so broad and very deep. And I think our listeners are going to learn so much from our program today. And it's also fun to know that we went to the same medical school.
Right? Yeah, you did, didn't you? And what school was that?
University of Cincinnati College of Medicine.
But you didn't know each other.
We didn't know each other. We're 5 years apart.
Right. And I'm older. Which is now her privilege, not mine.
Well, from the list that I just read, there are thousands of topics that we could discuss today. And to the limit that we have time, we may meander in and out of some of them. But the one I want you to talk about, you said you're not an expert in, but you're certainly very, very knowledgeable of, because it involves cardiology and you are have appointments in cardiology. And the subject that we're going to talk about first is marijuana and what's happening here in Colorado, which I find breathtaking. Did it surprise you that the people of Colorado were one of only two states in the nation to make it generally available for people to get marijuana and to make that a major interest and entity in their lives?
Unfortunately, Dr. Dobson, I was not surprised. Colorado's a funny state politically and is kind of a free spirit in terms of its political persuasions. But I think perhaps one of the more important reasons for making marijuana available for recreational use is the income connected to it. And this
is a major
driving force, I think, for the approval of cannabis products for use by the public.
Well, when I say I'm surprised, it's because of the implications of available marijuana for children, for teens. Not that they can legally use it, but they will when it's out there. You know, they're even talking about vending machines for marijuana. It just takes my breath away that people were not concerned enough about the implications of this cannabis, as you said, and what it means for driving safety and what it means for the lack of motivation that often occurs. There's a reason why in the 1960s, when I was in graduate school, it was the big deal. Everybody was hammering to get marijuana. Now we legalize it in Colorado, and people are even moving here for that purpose. That's a sad commentary, isn't it?
Right. We have a pediatrician here with us, too, Meg, in terms of the concerns that relate to children and adolescents and having access to it. And in fact, there's potentially a particular danger for the younger age group in that adolescent age children who are exposed to marijuana may be at increased risk for psychiatric disease such as schizophrenia and paranoia and other psychoses. It's really a shame that we're exposing our young people to this at such a young age.
Is that generally known in the public? Has the media reported that concern?
I don't think so. I think you're seeing this in the medical literature where it's listed as an adverse effect of marijuana, particularly in youth. But yet, do the public know about this? No, I don't think so.
That's why I think shows like this are very, very important so that our listeners can weed through all of the anecdotal stories that they're reading about marijuana and really pull some hard science into it and say, here's why you, as a mom or dad, need to be concerned about your kids. Mm.
Well, that is the background for why I ask you to be with us again today, and especially because Shirley and I and Margaret and you, we went to a symphony together, went out to dinner beforehand, and you mentioned that there are recent findings about the implications of marijuana for cognitive functioning, brain development, and so on. Tell us about that.
Well, I think that's one issue, Dr. Dobson, the risk for cognitive impairment. There's no question if you're drunk on marijuana, it's as if you're drunk on alcohol. I mean, the point is that you're impaired in terms of judgment, decision making, and simply learning and memory. Those are altered in the acute setting. And I think what I brought to your attention, though, was more so the relationship of heavy and recent marijuana use to cardiovascular events. And this experiment actually is a retrospective analysis of a database in France, out of Toulouse, France, where they've monitored public consumption of marijuana and adverse effects over intervals. And the most recent interval they've examined carefully is 2006 to 2010. In that interval, they had nearly 2,000 adverse effects of marijuana reported. These are spontaneous reports to the government. And of these, 35 were of a cardiovascular disease nature, almost all occurring in young people under the age of 40, and 9 of them associated with sudden death, either heart attacks, and or cardiac arrhythmias in people that had had heavy use within the recent period.
Was like that a peer review?
No, this was an observational database, and it's been criticized to some extent because it was observational. So we don't know what the incidence of this is now, but we do have other reports showing up in the literature. And the Marshfield Clinic had a very convincing one recently where the risk of a myocardial infarction was perhaps four times greater in marijuana users. This is a heart attack, four times higher in marijuana users. People with known coronary heart disease are more likely to get chest pain earlier with the same amount of exertion on marijuana than they would be off marijuana. We know that just smoking a joint increases heart rate and increases blood pressure. And so presumably some of these cardiovascular outcomes could be in individuals who already have cardiovascular disease and don't know that they have cardiovascular disease. So I think we're feeling the tip of the iceberg now, Dr. Dobson. We don't really have a good sense of how prevalent this is and potentially how serious. But the bottom line is heavy use of recent is probably a risk for a cardiovascular disease event, particularly in people who would appear not to have cardiovascular disease.
Can you define heavy use, please, for our listeners?
Well, right. It might be, you know, multiple joints, enough to be cognitively impaired. And we're talking about use within the last 12 to 24 to 48 hours. And keep in mind, cannabis products or marijuana can be ingested. It can be snorted. It can be smoked.
It can be
candy. It can be given in other foods. You know, like candy, for instance. And I think this is a real concern. It's kind of interesting if you look at smoking a joint. Ultimately, the amount of marijuana you're exposed to is only 25% of the smoke that was delivered through the tobacco product or through the marijuana product. So a lot of it just goes into the air or gets dissipated very, very quickly. But still, it's enough to get someone intoxicated by frequent use or abundant use over a short period of time.
When you consider the implications of this social experiment, because that's what it is, mm-hmm. we don't know for sure what the medical implications are, you just said it, or for the social implications, what will happen to the desire to work and support a family? What will happen to fathers and mothers who are stoned when their kids need them? What will happen to teenagers who get their hands on it? And they are. Why would we take a chance with something with such disastrous implications, even if they don't in the long run prove to be problematic? You know, it just seems to me that we're taking a leap off a bridge here.
Well, I think it's an important point to make that we need to qualify the recreational approval for legal use of marijuana products by the public in that there are medical indications for marijuana. I mean, there are certain circumstances medically where marijuana has proven medicinal value. And I think the most common use is for pain or for muscle spasms. But an appropriate use might also be in a cancer patient undergoing chemotherapy where there's a lot of nausea and vomiting. And my late wife, Sharon, during some of her most extensive chemotherapy, vomited continuously throughout every round of chemotherapy. Mm-hmm. And they tried THC on her. And in fact, it had no impact. But it does have an effect in other people. So it can be a successful therapeutic given in that setting. We have a friend who's now dying of pancreatic cancer who's at Temple University in Philadelphia, and he now is eating because of cannabis products. But again, these are medical indications. And by the way, every state doesn't have medical indications. But those that do, there are appropriate utilizations. And then there are experimental utilizations which have not been adequately tested or approved yet. But the indications that are there, I think medically, are sound and appropriate. But recreational use, that's a whole different ballgame.
But it happens.
It does. And you mentioned cognitive impairment, or we alluded to problems in the central nervous system or in the brain from marijuana use. It's reported in most inserts that are connected to marijuana products that people at middle age or older who may be at risk for other types of brain disorders such as Alzheimer's, et cetera, not use these products because there is some evidence that you could accelerate the course downhill of using marijuana when you have some cognitive impairment or disorder of the central nervous system. So this is another cautionary note placed on marijuana products.
I just wanted to comment on that. In Michigan, we had passed that you could use cannabis for medical reasons, and we had clinics set up in different cities. And in our practice, we have primary care practice, and we had many patients. I, as a pediatrician, even I had two patients who came in and told me that they wanted medical marijuana for different physical ailments, and I refused it. But one of the difficulties that my partners had is that they found a demographic that was coming and asking for it. The similar crowd that came and asked for narcotics, which is a lot of young men and women with back pain. Now, it's hard for us as physicians to really quantify back pain. And really what a lot of them need is a lot of physical therapy and so on and so forth. And so that became really an ethical dilemma for a lot of my partners and my husband as well. The other thing that was disturbing to me, and I don't know if this is true in other states, but my husband, a physician, is an internist and pediatrician, decided to do an experiment and walk into a number of these clinics posed as a patient. And what he found was that accessing marijuana was extremely easy. In most cases, they did not have a physician there or even a nurse practitioner on staff. What the patient needed to do in order to get the medical marijuana was to bring in a record, a medical record, and have a physician review it, and then interview with a physician who was in another part of Michigan via Skype. And that physician would speak with you for half an hour to the tune of about $600 per half hour, and then decide whether or not he or she was going to dispense medical marijuana to you. This is really bad medicine.
It really is. And I think this raises an important concern. I think cannabis products prescribed medically are a fallback product.
Yes.
This is not first-line therapy.
Yes.
And there are many considerations we all go through as physicians before we prescribe any medication to any patient.
Exactly.
But here there's a note of caution that rises above most other medications. And finally, you know, 10% of people get addicted to marijuana. So it's just like an opiate. So you have those considerations.
That's not generally known either.
No.
Right. Addictive potential is clearly there for marijuana. And that is a consideration when one prescribes it. But again, remember what I said. It's a fallback drug. This is not a first line for anything. Pain can be taken care of with numerous other types of medications.
Exactly.
Muscle spasms can be taken care of with rehab and physical medicine and many other medications. This is not a first-line drug for anything. Nausea and vomiting, we must have five or six different compounds we would administer before a cannabis product. So, you know, it's there for medical reasons, and there are a few people. And I think one of the unique applications is the cancer patient who's not eating.
Exactly.
There's no question that THC or, you know, one of the cannabis products stimulates appetite and helps people who have no appetite at all and who are losing weight. You know, that's not everybody. But probably a significant
number.
See,
and I think
of people.
In states where they wanted to approve it for medical use only, I think that there should be very specific stipulations. Yeah. In these conditions, patients should have it, but not necessarily for chronic low back pain, chronic fatigue, or depression, whatever. Because you're absolutely right. I agree with it. But for those in primary care who are the gatekeepers, it was a mess. It was just a nightmare. You know, many times when I have had discussions about the legalization of marijuana for recreational use, we don't have it in Michigan as you do here in Colorado, people will say to me, but how can you be such a hypocrite? Do you drink wine or do you have friends that drink wine and beer? What about that? Using marijuana is just like using alcohol recreationally. And to me, it has never been the same because using alcohol can be used without getting drunk. The purpose of using marijuana is to get high. You don't use it for taste or, you know, things like that. What do you say to people who use the analogy between marijuana and alcohol?
Well, actually, as Dr. Dobson was alluding to this before, alcohol came to mind right away, and we haven't talked about that yet. But that's always the justification for another potentially injurious product to enter the market. Alcohol, I agree, is somewhat different, but there are some similarities, too. But does that open the door further to approve something and that can be potentially harmful to the individual or to the public as a whole? And I say that's not a reason for approval of marijuana. But, I mean, alcohol is there and can be used ultimately very judiciously. And the Bible doesn't prohibit alcohol. It just says drunkenness is prohibited, right? So a glass of wine or, you know, a beer does not intoxicate people.
Exactly.
Whereas marijuana that's used is less predictable. In other words, we know pretty much how much alcohol you get that takes you drunk. That's why we have levels we measure in breath and in blood to determine the level of intoxication. Marijuana, that's still an art that's being defined, and the science isn't quite there yet. And so I think this is a real problem for the police officer when she or he arrests you on the side of the road and you've been using cannabis products. What level determines inadequate cerebral functioning under those circumstances? This is really a moving target right now.
Mm-hmm. Margaret mentioned to me a case of someone in Denver who was high, was loaded, and killed his wife. Mm-hmm. You know the details of that?
Well, I think Margaret knows the story better than I. But my understanding is this is a church-going guy who's had a full-time job and well-respected by his friends and family, and father of three, I believe, who ultimately got drunk on, I believe, an ingestible. I think it was a brownie.
So it was marijuana, but in another
form. It was in a food form. I think it was a brownie or candy. Anyway, and his behavior became very unpredictable and threatening, and the wife called 911, and he in fact shot her while she was on the phone in front of his three children. So that case, he's been
Charged with murder.
He's been charged with murder, and he's awaiting further evaluation by the court system. But here's an example of an unnecessary death of a young woman with young children because of marijuana. I think, you know, you can always find cases and points to make anything you want, but these kinds of events may not have occurred without the availability of marijuana recreationally.
Hmm. We're almost out of time, but I have an article here that speaks to the scope of marijuana use here in Colorado now that it's been legalized for certain purposes. And I'm reading, the demand for marijuana by Colorado adult residents is estimated to be 121.4 metric tons in 2014. In addition, the demand for visitors to the state is estimated to be at 8.9 metric tons for the total estimated demand of 130.3 metric tons. That sounds like a lot to me in a state that previously prohibited and even prosecuted those that were sellers of marijuana. I don't know whether that speaks to anybody else but me, but that says we have a problem and a growing problem in this state. And I think we've made a huge mistake. And 10 or 15 or 20 years from now, we will know it.
Yes, I think you're right. I think that keep in mind that at a single purchase of a marijuana product, 4 ounces is the maximum you can buy, and you can't transport it across state lines.
Well, there are a lot of people.
Yeah, but 4 ounces compared to 121,000 metric tons. I mean, we're talking about a small sample in any individual purchase. Yes, it's a big concern. It's really overwhelming to consider how many people might potentially do harm to themselves and others because of this product now being recreationally available.
Well, I mentioned at the top of the program that there were many, many subjects that you and I and Dr. Meeker could talk about. And if you don't mind, you've driven down from Denver to be with us here in Colorado Springs. And if you will stay with us, I'd love to talk to you about one of the others.
Okay.
Can you do that?
Be happy to do so.
Great.
Thanks so much for being here. Mm-hmm. And Margaret, you're not mic'd up, but thank you for coming down too.
She corrected me. It wasn't brownies. It was candy. But anyway,
candy.
Some form of ingestible.
Well, does that – we're out of time, but does that entice children to get a hold of it?
Oh, I'm sure it does. But I mean, I wouldn't think a child who's not informed would be seeking it out. They would have mm-hmm. to be informed. But I'm sure, you know, what a reputation our state has as being a marijuana-approved state for recreational use. It probably brings more money into the state because people will come here to buy recreation.
That irritates me when
just unbelievable.
Sure,
and George Soros played a role in getting the public to accept this notion. So I may be the last man standing, but I say shame on you, George Soros, for doing this to us. And shame on those of you who voted for it. I think you will live to regret it.
Right.
Absolutely. We will regret it one day. And for those of you listening to our program today, if you would like more information about Dr. Echol or the issue of marijuana, please visit our website, drjamesdobson.org, or give us a call at 877-732-6825. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you again next time for the conclusion of our program with Dr. Echol on the next edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.